On Tuesdays at 11, tune in for Vinyl and More on Reach Out in the Darkness. Wednesdays, Damage Control brings you the hottest regional hip-hop artists. On Thursdays at 11, tune in for Metal with Bill Bates on Sweet Nightmares. And on Fridays, check out a unique mix with Laura Palooza. Those are just a few of our late-night mix selections, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. All of these programs air during FCC-permitted Safe Harbor and may contain material that may be objectionable to some listeners. Discretion is advised. You are listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to another edition of Technology Bites. Something, something, something.
Something or another, this thing or that. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Guru Valves.
Yeah, he is. Wow.
Wow, that was loud.
It is. Everything seems kind of loud. Kind of
my mic off. Was real... quiet.
Yeah, you weren't coming through loud and clear.
Super hot.
You had a problem with that mic last time, and now this one's super hot.
Super hot.
Super hot.
Well, welcome to the show, everybody. We're glad you could tune in. It's a balmy winter's evening here in Houston, Texas.
For now.
I know. It's the times, they are changing. The weather is changing. But, yeah, for right now, it's kind of warm out there, and... as Groovehouse pointed out, it's that typical muggy buildup as the cold front shoves that heat into a ball right here on the Gulf Coast.
Right.
So it's kind of unpleasant to be out there.
So we have a geek gathering on Friday.
A freezing geek gathering.
It's going to be a cold one. The low is supposed to be 36. The high is going to be 48 on Friday.
And there's a band playing at cons, so It should be a very interesting evening for the geek gathering.
Not on the roof, either. So.
No.
Dress warmly.
Yes.
But he'll have
so
those.
Don't confuse it with a homeless gathering.
Or do.
Well, the homeless don't stand around the Blinken box rubbing their hands and
Boy, if anybody wants to warm their hands, I bet Jim Thompson doesn't even come out. He doesn't look like somebody who wants to come out in the cold, but he might bring the Blinken Bucks. I think Cone has some of those area heaters, those heater towers. So we'll see. We've had such good weather. Who knows? Maybe something will just give. Maybe it'll just be cold and not rainy.
We've been extremely lucky so far with the weather.
We can just bring some 55-gallon drums. Put
and some fingerless gloves. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Pentium fours.
We'll be warming up like we're gonna be hobos. Bring your bindle full of warm socks. All right.
Don't forget your bucket.
I'm bringing 1 gallon milk jugs of yellow liquid.
All right.
All right.
Eggnog?
Con doesn't stock those.
I don't have a phone.
Warm yellow liquid.
Is that like the reverse lemonade stand you're going to be running here? All right. Visit us online at geekradio.com. That is our website where we post all the valuable information. There should be an announcement there about the Geek Gathering. It talks nothing of the cold, but we're gonna make the best of it.
Sucker him in.
I said sucker him in.
Sucker him in?
Don't mention that it's going to be freezing. Just see who shows up.
Yeah, because we don't want to tell everybody it's going to be cold on Friday on the air.
Change the artwork to be like a Caribbean theme.
Yeah, that'll work. But, so we're going to have a Geek Gathering. Information's at geekradio.com.
It's the Technology Bites Geek Gathering Luau.
With jugs of yellow liquid. And, the phone number here is 713.
Sorry, I was going to say, if the jugs of yellow liquid are warm, people might be willing to embrace them. Because they're so cold.
It's going to be great.
Is that a yellow jug and Santa's sleigh on the banner? No, I don't think so. It's questionable.
You know, Santa can't really make a pit stop. He's got a lot of work to
catheter,
do.
Catheter.
Catheter. Man, we'll just drop it. Just stop.
Depends, maybe.
That's what that was your answer when you were asked if you wore boxers or briefs.
Depends.
It depends.
That depends.
All right. Well, this is degenerating quickly, so.
It didn't take long.
No, it sure didn't.
It's the Yellow Snow edition of Technology Bites.
Breathe. All right, yes. And IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. In the channel Tech Bites, we hang out there, the show that's even more raunchy than the show that we put on the air. And you can hang out with us there and do that. Phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. How was everybody's Cyber Monday?
No one wanted to chat.
Did anybody score?
I did cyber on Monday.
Did you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I accidentally went to, not on Cyber Monday, but on Black Friday, I accidentally went to Micro Center. Because I forgot it was Black Friday, and I needed a keyboard.
How was it?
Was it bad? Actually, I'd like
Did
to...
Did you get tased?
No, I'd like to report nothing but complete civility from the mouse and keyboard aisle. It was crowded, but we got in a conversation about like the MX Cherry Red versus just plain Cherry Red and the differences between the blues and the browns as far as buttons go. Mm-hmm. And then saw a couple of people I hadn't seen in a while.
What are you talking about?
The keys. I was looking for a keyboard at Micro Center.
So the keyboards have different colored keys?
Well, no. The keys aren't necessarily different colors, but a different, like, for instance, like the MX Cherry Red is the tactile click where you go half down and then it goes click and then it comes back up, which are like the old IBM buckling
what
keyboard
style. What
do you
mean
by MX? MX means mechanical, I think. The dash MX is mechanical. If you go, there's like a Wikipedia page, just like the Rainbow books, there are equal
are
amounts
mechanical
of colors.
Or the...
No, these are the squishy ones. Uh-huh. These are the, I think,
talking
like
about the clacky
ones.
Keyboards. What do you call them? Yeah. Like the IBM?
Cherry Red MX is the clackety keyboard. Uh-huh. Like the blues, I think, are even more clackety. Greens are the push down, but they're silent. They feel like that, but they're silent.
About. It's one of them has a spring in it, and one of them actually has a mechanical... Bent piece of metal breaks.
You put X amount of pressure on it, and then once you go past that point, then it only takes like a tenth of that pressure to go down, and
it's
it
like
travels
those,
down.
It's like those little Halloween clickers.
Yeah, it's a lot easier on your hands. I've been coding a lot on this flat, horrible Mac Air non-lit keyboard, and my wrists have been going, so I wanted to go get a good keyboard for that.
You're going to borrow this?
No, I've got no. I'm not there yet.
You know, I've got
him his arm brace.
One of those. He did. Thank you, Groovehouse.
I've got one of the original IBM PS2 mechanical keyboards.
I've got a few of them, but they don't want to go. I'll plug it. They go to AT and then to PS2 and then USB, and something's breaking down.
I've got the G4 full keyboard. Those are nice.
Those are expensive, those, right?
Some of these keyboards, they start at $50 and go up to $150.
You actually feel a benefit from using that?
I do, and it annoys. Well, this one's for home, but I know the clicky one annoys my office mates. Like, people in office down can hear me when I'm typing, when I'm coding. But at least people know I'm there. People know I'm working.
They can tell how fast you type.
Yes, I'm very good. You know, I'll just tip random buttons every once in a while when I come in just to wake up the monitor. Like, wow, he's already on.
Window open. So, I bought one Cyber Monday thing. I found a really cheap micro quadcopter with a camera in it.
Fun.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll get it. It'll allow 6 to 8 weeks for delivery, but
I can't say what I bought.
Because it's a gift for someone who might be listening?
Yeah, because
you didn't buy it while you were Christmas cybering, gifts. Did you?
I cybered and then went and picked it up.
You usually do that first.
So, have you noticed that they've redone the inside of Micro Center?
I used to be able to go exactly where I needed to go.
Right.
I don't like the shrinking book aisle. I do like there's a lot of Arduino stuff.
Right. Yeah, I went there 2-3 weeks ago, and they had rearranged the aisles.
They've done it a couple times in quick succession, because I can almost remember, I can plot over the course of 20 years how they've changed stuff, mostly where the Linux stuff has moved. But the last couple moves, it's just been, I'm kind of half lost.
Well, they've
there.
Gone up, mm-hmm. They're stacking
more and more.
Things to the ceiling. So it's
feels very kind of gauntlet. Yeah, like you're running a gauntlet on some of the aisles.
Right. I liked Micro Center because they always carried my books. They always had my books.
They used to have an excellent, excellent book selection. I mean, all the basics, they have all the newest O'Reilly books, everything.
But,
that's
the hard truth of the computer book business. In general, it's shrinking. So
I went there, but it was before Black Friday. But they still had some flash sticks on sale. And so I got a 64 gig one for $27 or something. It's not bad. I mean, it was PNY, which is a decent brand. It was as cheap as the Micro Center brand, which I don't trust as much.
I did get this accidentally. I thought they'd be out. It's the new Nexus 7.
Accidentally got it.
Well, no, I didn't go in for any Black Friday deals, and I picked up the thing. I'm like, whoa, this is $40, $60 less than the Google store was going to have it, I heard, on Cyber Monday. So I asked, are there any more in stock? And I'm like, I don't think so, but let me check. And sure enough, there is one. So I was
yes. You shouldn't have.
So that's the new Nexus 7.
It's a lot faster than the old one.
How much did they have it for? $240?
Under two. Under 200 for the 32 gig
awesome.
Wi-Fi. Yeah.
That's 32?
32 gigs.
Oh, yeah.
So nice. I couldn't say no, because my old one, it bricked it. I didn't actually do it. The over-the-air
was
upgrade.
Was that the one?
No, that was the old one. So that one's been down for the count.
Lisa has the old one, and I have not let
that
her
That is
upgrade.
Zippy.
It's really fast, and the speakers are a lot better. It's a little thinner. They got rid of the silver bezel, black bezel on the front now, but it's quick. So I think it's the Tegra 3.
Yeah, I have one of those at home. They're nice.
It looks just like the Nexus 5. It's just a slightly larger
version.
Don't
like the tabs you have open in your browser here,
buddy.
Oh,
what do I have? Oh, motorcycle tabs.
Motorcycle tabs.
They're always open.
They're all motorcycle. Is that your homepage? You have four tabs?
No. I was actually I was all
Cyber Monday motorcycle.
No, I was drooling. I got the Wisdom Tooth pulled, so I was just kind of looking at the tablet. No. I wasn't drooling on that. It's been wiped down several times.
It had to be
after Cyber
after
Monday.
Cyber Monday. It's the least you could do.
No, you put it in a Ziploc bag and then you put it back.
He's thought this through.
No. So Cherry MX Black switches are linear switches. There's brown switches are the tactile switches. Blue switches are tactile and clicky.
Do they have
the Cherry MX Clear are tactile switches.
Now how do you know what you're getting
say on the keyboard.
Really?
They don't like you opening the boxes and prying up the keys. So usually you'll flip the box over.
What brand
say,
keyboard is this? What do you
they, no all. So the thing is they make these are I think just a very how you've got the FTDI chips that do USB
Show
to
the,
serial.
The animated GIF.
Yeah, so these are kind of cool. You can see how they all different, how they work. But like one company, these are just standard ways of making keys. I'm sure one or two companies have. This is what Flichter was talking about, the buckling key springs in the old IBMs. But yeah, if you go like overclock.net has some stuff. If you just go search for mechanical keyboard guide, you'll see all these different
things.
So
I have one of those kind of old Microsoft natural keyboards that's extremely unnatural, but I love it. And what kind of key thing does that
probably have? None of these. Some of them are just like there's
it's
so
very
mushy.
Clacky, and I like
oh,
it
is clacky. That
it,
could
yeah.
be like a buckling.
No,
spring
I think
key
it's I think
now.
It's just loose keys. Because I mean I don't I don't know I don't think Microsoft ever made any mechanical keyboards. I don't think. I mean I
you
had,
know the one I'm talking about.
I had
right?
one that's it's kind the ergonomic
right,
one that's
right.
like, kind of got a hill in the middle
yes,
of it.
Yes, right.
Yeah, those keys are just they're loose and they just make a lot of noise. But it's the mechanism is still like a like a. Mnemonic pad.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to save myself from was like these keys, there's nothing to keep you from bottoming out.
Right.
So you can just like pound your fingers
right.
to death, whereas these other ones, the other ones, it's kind of like they're soft parachute
right.
landing for your fingers.
Right.
You know,
so in the very earliest days of computers at newspapers, we had these
back
terminals.
In the olden days. Tell back us a story, Uncle Dwight.
It had these terminals that were all one piece, the keyboard, the screen, and they were on rollers because there weren't enough of them. We had to share it. I'd write my story, and then I'd roll it over to another reporter, and she would write hers. But they had these great keyboards, and I'm a real heavy typist. I'm really, and they were incredibly loud. And people used to tell me to, like, will you type quiet?
Lighten up, man.
Lighten up. But I love those keyboards. I still kind of bang on these. So,
is that left over from typewriter days when you had to actually put physical pressure?
I think it probably is because I had a... When I took typing, my parents gave me a mechanical typewriter.
So like pre-Electrolux.
Yes.
Like when you had,
had
to pound
to,
on
like,
the keys.
I had to pound the keys. And yeah, that may be where that comes from.
All right. So.
All keyboards, all the time.
That had to have been an exciting trip to Micro Center.
I enjoyed it, yeah. I mean, I thought,
you
like, what have I done?
Out of it, so
yeah,
yeah,
there's tons of people, and the lines move fast, you know, all in all. Good trip.
I was watching the videos of Black Friday and. Just really becoming sad watching those happen. People fighting and
I think MMA is going to give way and Walmart's just going to make people sign waivers and televise it and that's going to be the new ugly blood sport of America.
Well, why pay for big prizes? All you have to do is take $20 off a TV set, you know?
We were Heather was looking at something that she wanted to buy and it's normally I think like $180 or something. And they had, someplace had them on sale for $130, except you couldn't get them. They were out of stock. But the same place was, I think they were out of stock because they were going to put them on sale on Black Friday for, I think, $100, which is a really good price. But so she was planning like, oh, we'll have to go there and we'll have to do this and get. And I'm like, oh, no. Look, they're $130. We're going to go find the ones for one. I will pay the $30 difference for them to not have to do Black Friday.
I was curious about what the rules are on Black Friday. Like if you camp out, if you set up and camp out, from what I understand, you can like if you have a group of people, you can spell each other, like so you don't actually have to stay there all night or for days.
Like you can trade out.
I think it's organized among the groups, like The Walking Dead. I think it's all everyone for themselves. If you want to fold in with another camp, you can, but. Be careful.
But if I go over there and I set up a tent, I'm going to be there for a week before Black Friday because I want to get a $10 microwave oven or whatever. Can I have one of you guys come in? Not that you would, not that I would either, but could I have one of you guys come by and say, look, I just need to go my job for a day. I ran out of vacation to.
I don't know. I think it kind of does depend on the line and what the rules have kind of.
The
it's
consensus?
Kind of organic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, now, I mean. I think some stores have tried to get away from some of that insanity. Like I think Walmart this year was giving out bands when you showed up, and then once you had a band, it was numbered. And so if you didn't have to stand in line necessarily once you got the band. You could just go around the store, but when the sale started, you walked up, and they took them in order of the band numbers. So they were, trying to get rid of some of that
insanity. Did that work really well this year?
I have no idea.
I don't think it did. I saw some footage. It was pretty embarrassing.
I mean, the crazy ones are where it is a free for all, and they have like you know four doors that all open, and the employees just open the doors, and it's just a mad rush through the store of whatever people can grab. Like, yeah, that stuff's crazy.
I used to spend Thanksgivings in Brazil a while ago, and I would always watch it on the news, and it was a big deal. People would be like, oh, Americans, that's so silly. But they don't have Thanksgiving now, but Black Friday and Cyber Monday has spread to South America. Like, I know it's in Mexico, and now there are all kinds of commercials all over Brazil. I don't know if it's getting crazy like that, but our commercialism has infected
everybody. I saw one from Puerto
everybody.
Rico that was just crazy.
They probably stab each other.
I mean, at least like a, you know, they are a, what are they? They're not a colony. Help me out here. They're something of Puerto Rico.
A country.
Protectorate. Well, they're U.S., so they're kind of grandfathered in at the Thanksgiving. These are countries that don't even have Thanksgiving, and they're doing the thing. So.
Barbarians. All right. Let's go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Hey, lately there's been, you know, stories about, like, Adobe getting compromised and people getting passwords and, you know, the various exploits where, you know, a company gets attacked. The hackers steal a lot of logins and passwords. Now there's a new one with 2 million accounts compromised from popular sites like Google, Yahoo, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn after malware captured login credentials from users around the world, according to a new report. This is according to TrustWave. And the deal is they didn't compromise any of the, you know, they didn't compromise Facebook or LinkedIn, Twitter, or Google. They used malware installed on users' machines to steal the passwords and, you know, the logins and passwords for the particular sites and, you know, capture them, you know, get it all together. It's called Pony. Pony steals passwords that are stored on the infected users' computers as well as by capturing them when they're used to log in. The culprit behind the hack remains unknown. TrustWave wrote on its blog that two targets were Russian speaking social networking sites, VK.com and odnoklasniki.ru, which I'm sure I'm butchering, which could hint at the origin of the virus. The malware was configured so that the majority of the credential information was sent to a server in the Netherlands. The server does not show what countries the information came from, so it's hard to break down how many users from each country were affected. But according to Abby Ross, a spokesperson for TrustWave, the attackers targeted users worldwide, including the U.S., Germany, Singapore, Thailand, and others. The other thing is the stolen credentials were never publicly posted online. TrustWave researchers were able to access a command and control server used by the Pony botnet and recovered the passwords from there. So they reached out to major service providers and to help them do something to protect the compromised accounts. It was about 57% was Facebook accounts, followed by Yahoo at 10%, Google 9%, and Twitter for 3%. Facebook spokesperson told Mashable the company has already reached out to those with compromised accounts. So here's an older password deal. You know, if you thought your password was lame, this one apparently for 20 years. The launch code for U.S. Minuteman nuclear missiles, you know what it was? It was all zeros. So it was a 3-6, it was an 8-digit code, and they were all set to zero for 20 years. This wasn't really a secret. The codes known as permissive action links, PALs, came to be following the 1963-1964 Cyprus crisis when NATO countries Turkey and Greece wanted to nuke each other. Wow, I wasn't around for that one, I'm glad. The PALs were meant to give only the president the power to use such weapons. Apparently, it was a symbolic security feature because for two decades, multiple presidents carried around a briefcase with the allegedly constantly changing codes, although it may as well have been filled with shredded newspaper. The code itself wasn't very secret. The quote, our launch checklist in fact instructed us, the firing crew, to double check the locking panel in our underground launch bunker to ensure that no digits other than zero had inadvertently been dialed into the panel. So, can you imagine? So setting the code to launch a nuclear missile to all zeros. That's way up. That's right up there with having password one as your password. Now, fortunately, this all by the late 70s, I think it became more known, and they had to change the system, and so they did. But pretty sad. And other kind of government news. This one, I hesitate to report on it. It seems to me like a publicity stunt, but Amazon actually has talked about using drones to deliver stuff, merchandise to people, using drones. And the idea is if you were within about 10 miles of an Amazon fulfillment center, that they would, they were testing using drones to deliver the packages. Kind of an odd idea, but here's some things about it. So it's not going to happen anytime soon. There's FAA regulations that are at issue, and of course privacy fears. Actually, if they do the drone thing, then I would bet the most popular thing would be drones that follow the Amazon drones and pick up whatever little package they drop off somewhere. It's not like you're going to sign for it. So what? They'll drop the box with whatever you ordered out on your sidewalk, the front porch. It has to be accessible from the air. So I don't know. This seems kind of although I guess if you're having it delivered, that quickly, you would be around to receive the package. But so anyways, I think it sounded like one of the things is that there was a Amazon segment on 60 Minutes, which was essentially a long form commercial for Amazon, if one happened to watch it. In other news, on the holiday front, and 10 things you might want to buy online. We don't do that. There are some things, there's just some interesting little things. One of the things that seems to be popular this year, just to, that people do seem to be pursuing and buying, like Barrett, tablets apparently are something that's very popular. One of the things that's been interesting, an odd change, and usually, who cares? I don't usually report on this, but it seems surprising to me because of Apple's kind of high end. Dell has always been the most desirable desktop brand around the holidays. When they do the kind of ranking stuff, and it makes sense because Dell's price range goes over a wide range, and so it makes, I can understand it. But apparently, for the first time, Apple is on top of the list of intended brands for desktop purchases. That's according to Parks Associates. In 2011 and 2012, Dell was the top desktop brand, but Apple has displaced it. So I guess people must be liking them some iMacs. In other brands, let's see. Oh, so Apple went to first place, Dell's in second, and Hewlett-Packard's in third. For streaming devices, Apple TVs had the top spot for the past 3 years, but while many people said they want an Apple TV last year, they bought a Roku box instead. So even this whole kind of plan about brands is not—it's not some kind of destiny. It is possible the same thing could happen with desktop computers, but it is interesting that people are—that people, when they expressed a preference, actually preferred Apple, because of kind of the high-end nature. Another Apple news, while I've got it, we've got to have some kind of rumors. The rumors, this one I just wonder about. I don't know who – I understand smaller for iPads, but larger seems like an onion story. But there are rumors that a Chinese – let's see. Apple Insider cites the Chinese publication Pad News, which says iThing manufacturer Foxconn has built 5 prototype versions of an alleged 12.9-inch tablet featuring 2K and or 4K screen resolutions. That's, you know, for if in case you don't know what that is, the 2K is 2048 by 1152 pixels, so that's bigger than high definition. 4K is basically double of high definition, which of course when you double it with a screen like that, that really means you have the pixels of four high definition screens, because obviously it's twice as wide and twice as tall, which is 4096 by 2034 pixels for a total of like 9.5 million pixels. The Retina, just for reference, the Retina display on the current iPad Air is 2048 by 1536 pixels, and is so it's generally considered a 2K display. So supposedly Apple is looking at these kind of larger pads. I just don't know. I mean, I don't. It seems like a monitor. I understand bigger is better, and maybe on a laptop, but it doesn't seem like a tablet. You know, the change in weight and some of that just doesn't seem like it would benefit people. But that's the rumor, so you know about it. In other rumors, as far as a big screen, now that you've learned that you know, jargon about 2K screens. the newest version of Samsung's Galaxy S line of flagship devices may well have appeared in online benchmark tests. Phone Arena on Wednesday pointed to new results from GFX Bench showing an as yet unannounced Samsung device. If the device shown off were to prove to be Samsung's next flagship handset, it would signal a huge push on the part of Samsung to differentiate its gadgets, as the handset in the benchmarks appears to sport a 2K resolution screen. The device has a 2560 by 1440 screen, as far as pixels, on a 5.25-inch display that would be a pixel density of 560 pixels per inch. I know that stuff all sounds geeky, but think about it. Laser printing is 300 pixels per inch, essentially. And so getting up to 560, I don't know if there's that big a benefit or what. Other specs for the device included a quad-core Snapdragon 800 processor. It's said to be running Android 4.4 KitKat, although it's uncertain whether Samsung would have successfully ported the new Google operating system to its devices already, since KitKat's only been out for a little while. And finally, this one may go on your Christmas list or may be a part for maybe something to give some value to a cheapo, easy thing for Christmas. I talked about the Chromecast a while back, or actually last week you mentioned it because you could get it for like $30 and it's available all over the place. What Chromecast does is lets you stream media from your device that's using Chrome to an HDMI-enabled TV, and it's like $30-$35. And apparently one of the most requested features for the Chromecast has been support for local file playback, so you could play back your own videos and stuff. And it looks like that's getting very close. Media Center app Plex could get support for Chromecast very soon, as traces of Chromecast code can already be found in their software. A Reddit user first spotted a file called Chromecast.xml in a recent version of the Plex Media Server software this week. Upon closer inspection, it looks like the file is one of a number of device profiles that the software uses to determine whether it has to transcode a video file before streaming it. So Plex hasn't said anything, but that could be a step forward. That would add value, especially if you already use Plex. That could add value to your purchase of your potential purchase of a Chromecast this holiday season. Which, for $35, that's almost if it worked, if it has value for you and you can use it, then cool. If you're not interested, well, that's fine too. And that's the news.
All right, Beard, thanks for that.
You went back to your old sign-off.
Yeah, well, whatever.
That's very comfortable.
No fancy exit gesture.
And Chromecast there for a while, it could play all the media types, but then Google came in and actually disabled the ability to do that. So maybe they're going to bring it onto their own.
So, well, at the very least, it gives it some potential, and you'd think that'd be something to push out before the holidays, because it certainly adds value to the Chromecast. I know I'm increasingly tempted to get one just because of the usefulness of being able to stream from a tablet or whatever to your TV. Because I watched, I don't know if any of you watched Turkey Day, the Mystery Science Theater 3000 marathon.
No, I didn't even know about that.
It was streamed, it was only online.
Oh.
They streamed it via YouTube, and they did six of the most requested episodes. It was pretty good. We spent at my house, that was kind of running in the background from, it started around noon and went till 10 o'clock, and we ran pretty much the whole time.
You're the one sucking up all the bandwidth.
Yeah, but I went through about three devices before I got something that I had the right cables and connectors to hook up to the TV to get the stream. It was through YouTube, but you couldn't find it with whatever, you know, the embedded YouTube software or the YouTube software on a PS3. You had to go to the website, and it had to be able to launch YouTube from there, and then be able to expand it to full screen. So I ended up having to hook up a laptop to do it, which was kind of lame.
The Chromecast advertisements still annoy me, because they make it look like, oh, you just take the Chromecast and you just plug it into your
TV without having to hook up a power supply.
And it's so beautiful, and it hides behind the bezel of your TV. Yeah, they don't show that you have to plug power into it, which comes out the other end of the Chromecast, which makes it not quite as elegant.
Yeah, it sticks out about 3 inches. I've got a couple now, but all of mine will plug back into the TV and power off USB
TV. You have the
TV.
USB, but not all,
yeah,
USB,
not all USB TVs will do that, will right. do that yeah. But I don't like the fact, I wish it would come out and like do 90 degrees. I know you can get adapters. Well, can you? Can you get an HDMI adapter that does the bendy thing like USB adapters? I haven't seen them.
You can probably get, yeah, you can probably that's, get a an HDMI extension.
Yeah, that's what they should throw in there. Like, charge $3-4 more bucks and throw in this little 90-degree elbow, and then it'd be a lot nicer that way.
Hmm. I've heard at Best Buy you can get an oxygen-free gold-plated one for $200.
Whoa!
Monster.
Only 10 times the price of the Chromecast.
90-degree HDMI connector.
With long-grain copper.
Oh.
With organic long-grain copper.
You know, when you first described the Chromecast to somebody, when, you know, it's a little dongle, you plug it in, HDMI, you know, and then you get to the point where, and then you open up your phone, you go to YouTube app, you cast it, and they start, that's where people, you know, normal.
I cast magic missile!
Right. Exactly, that's right. It's like, what? You have to do what? It's not on there. No, it's on your phone, and you have to send it, and you have to wait for like, the version that works.
Explaining throughput to people is just one of the most mind-bogglingly
right.
difficult things
and then
to do.
And then you throw the tab to the TV, and I broke my TV.
Well, first of all, don't use jargon. Like, we don't cast it to the TV. You don't say that to someone that understands, like,
it's all on the wrist.
Except if you're looking at, like, the manual, it uses terms like that.
That's too bad.
The other thing is that if you have a dual-band router, and I don't know if it works on 5.
I like more than 2 bands.
Well, it depends. Yeah, it depends.
But if your phone is on one band and the Chromecast on the other, they won't talk to each other.
Well, as long as the router has to be able to bridge those, you can still get it
your
to work, but
you've
got to share a VLAN and have it, you know, subnetted the same. But it's kind of a pain. It's not your average home user is going to be able to go and do that probably. Right.
Nerds!
It's a nerd device. It's a total nerd device. This is,
yeah,
I don't think it's
so
ready for home use.
Explaining it to the masses is not part of the job description, right?
Except what they hear is, oh, it's $35 and it's as good as Apple TV.
See, I'm waiting for Chromecast 2 to come out. I think that'll be good.
All right, we got a call on line one that wants to talk Chromecast, so let the nerding continue.
All right, first up on the show, we're going to speak with Larry.
Hey, Larry, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys, I listen to you guys every week, and I always ask questions, and I have an answer for you guys.
Oh, okay.
Puerto Rico is a territory.
Territory, yes. That's the word he was looking for. Thank you.
It's like a stepchild.
I see.
Colony was probably very rude. And I realize that we worked out in IRC. We went there,
I've been
to Commonwealth, and we
forgot territory.
I've been
listening to y'all discussion about the little cast device, and as a novice, my question that I wanted to ask was, how does the thing work? being relatively computer literate, if I go buy one and stick it in.
All right, first of all, do you have a TV that accepts HDMI input?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Comcast, the
so
Chromecast device.
Approximately 27% of the way there.
Yeah. So the Chrome, the Chromecast basically plugs into the HDMI port to send content to the TV.
And then don't believe the commercials. That's not all you have to do.
Right. Well, you plug it in.
It needs power.
And you plug power into it. But let's just talk about the way it works, like the functionality.
See, that's my complaint. Y'all made the comment that the commercials are very shortcoming.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel that way, too, because it makes it look like all I have to do is go buy it, plug it in, and then I'm in Wonderland.
Well, you could be if you got the other components, because then you're going to need to have a device that will let you know will connect to the Comcast on the Wi-Fi. So that could be your laptop. Could it be your laptop?
Yeah, yeah. So if you've got Chrome,
that was going to be my question.
Right. So, so you have Google.
I work as a consultant and I do training classes.
Right.
And instead of having 50-foot of cable running across your classroom and me tripping over it all the time, I was thinking that this device works as well as they say it does.
Well, the problem that you would have, and it depends on if you have control over the training class location, because the Chrome...
Yeah, it's my facility.
Okay, the Chromecast is connected to the Wi-Fi, and whatever computer is connected to the Wi-Fi in that location, you can install Google Chrome on the device, and whatever you see in the web browser can then be sent to the device to display it on your television.
But the device has to be able to see the network and be able to punch out to the outside. So you'll have to have firewall rules in there to be able to get that out. So it's kind of funky.
Okay, yeah, see,
well,
if
the laptop can get to the internet, then the Chromecast can get to the internet.
I am a novice. I'm a 61-year-old dinosaur.
Okay. Well, you know, Barrett brings up a point which may or may not be a factor in that if your network is firewalled or secured from the outside world, you might have some problems. But if you're opening up HTTP and you can get to the web from your laptop, you should be able to, the Chromecast should also be able to get to the web, because what happens is you load a web page on your computer or your tablet or your phone, and then you send that content, huh?
You throw it.
You send it. to the Comcast, the Chromecast device.
And okay, then can I send information that's on my laptop?
Can you send
not
anything?
Yet.
No, the only thing that you can send is what's in the Chrome web browser.
Although if you can load what's on your laptop in a web page.
Yeah, but like if you have a plugin that lets you view PDFs in Chrome, you could then send a PDF there, but you couldn't necessarily send like a Word document or a PowerPoint.
Is sending PowerPoint presentations and manuals and
no?
What kind
I think
of
there's a Chrome extension that lets
what
you
kind
yeah
of
yeah any so here's anything you can do through Chrome, anything you can do through the browser, you can do straight to Chromecast. The issue is like anytime you get into video going through there, it gets super choppy. Anytime you get anything that moves, it gets super choppy. The only way to do things like that is going to be through the native apps that are supported through Chromecast, and that's going to be like Netflix. It's going to be Hulu Plus, and it's going to be
HBO Go,
YouTube. Things like that. Those come through really, really clearly, because they actually, what happens is the laptop hands off the link and then Chromecast goes directly to those websites.
But I thought that's what Chromecast did no matter what. Like even once you throw the link,
the commercials are real misleading.
It's going to the web page. It's not like mirroring with an Apple device where your device is doing it and streaming it to that device.
It does accept the Chrome extension that controls Chromecast. You're actually mirroring your browser onto the Chromecast, and that's when it gets choppy.
Let's remember that we got a caller on the line, and we're talking.
I
was trying to save you, Larry.
He was saying we were talking.
They're going off on a tangent.
It reinforces my lack of knowledge.
Well, all right, but Larry, let me rein it in here just a little bit, because
I'm scratching and dragging, trying to drag myself into the 20th century, not the 21st.
I understand. You got calluses on your knuckles, so
the needle goes on the gramophone record.
I was going to say, are you calling from a horse and buggy?
I have about 2,000 albums.
All right, cool.
Hey, that's gotten popular again, so you're cool.
All right, yeah. So just stop, everybody. Let me make my point here. Larry, the truth is that, yes, the commercials make it look like it's a simple, easy, breezy thing to use, and it's not quite there yet. But if you spend what it costs to buy it is so inexpensive that if you buy it and you throw your hands up in frustration, you're not out that much money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I just wanted to get y'all's input on it before I go buy one. Well, it's a great, from what I've seen, is it works really well if you want to be able to, like, show what's on a web page on your TV, basically. Then there's some additional functionality. But if you're looking for something to be able to wirelessly present course material to your television, is your computer that you're using, is it Windows or Mac?
It's a Windows.
Okay.
Like you said, I'm a dinosaur.
Okay. For Dwight, I want to ask him this question. If with an Apple TV, which is about three times more expensive than the Chromecast,
yeah,
the Apple TV will let you show anything that's on your computer screen on the television.
It will actually show the
screen.
Epson projector with a 110-inch screen.
Well, provided that you have either a new enough Mac, or
that's what
that
I was
you're
gonna
running
ask
software that will essentially do
that's
what
I was going to ask you. That's why I looped your attention to get to that point. If you have a Mac, it works great. There is a program that'll let you do it in Windows, but then you're going to get bogged down again a little bit with that.
It's called
AirPlay. I'm not good in that. I'm the guy that if when I come in the office in the morning and I push the on button, if everything works, I'm happy.
If you want to go like even low tech and get all the streaming and jumping through devices out of the way, you can get like an RF VGA adapter or RF HDMI adapter. So it's like you plug one end into the laptop, the other end into your Epson projector for anywhere from like $9 to $40, and it does kind of the same thing.
Okay, that would probably work with less frustration on my part.
Just make sure you get the right adapters, and then some of them won't do high resolutions. The cheap ones won't. So just make sure that, you know, whatever resolution your projector is, the thing you're buying will do it. But there's a lot online. I'm sure you can go down to Micro Center and pick one up.
Okay, yeah, I've been to Micro Center quite often. For a novice, I get treated better there than I do at some of the other places.
Yeah.
When I go in and I try to explain to them that I need something that you plug in the back of your computer so you can do something, they kind of look at me like I'm an idiot at some of the other stores. But every time I've been over to Micro Center, they've always been understanding, and they don't treat me like I'm stupid.
Their people seem really good, because usually when I go in and I need to like ask, like, hey, what aisle have you moved this to? The salesman is in like a 45-minute explanation with charts and graphs on exactly how something works. I've got to like wait. So they do seem really good there with new people.
That's the same way it is at EPO. Trying to get somebody to help you, they'll help you. They'll help the heck out of
you. It's a major difference.
But waiting for them to have time for you because they're helping the heck out of someone else is sometimes frustrating. Well, I wish you a lot of luck. Thanks for your call, Larry.
No problem. Y'all have a Merry Christmas, and I'll catch y'all next week.
All right. Merry Christmas. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. We've got a call in the queue. All the other lines are open. We got about 13 minutes before the top of the hour, so it gives us about 10 minutes of time to put people on the air and talk with you. It's not the Chromecast show, but it could be. But if you want to be on the air with us, or you just want to get in the queue for the second hour, 713-526-5738. You know, in the 70s, throwing someone a tab would have been this really horrible
blue star.
Blue star?
A tab.
Tab
was 90s.
Was that 90s?
I don't know.
I was thinking about the tab drink that competed with Fresco.
Yeah,
you get clunked in the head with a tin
can. Yeah, I was talking about something completely different.
Huh?
Tab, you haven't bought anything yet.
Did tab compete with Fresco?
Tab and Fresco were the two
diet drinks
of their day.
Because one's clear and the other's...
Right, one was the clear soda.
Fresco
and one
was grapefruity, and the other one was a cola. Right,
yeah.
Right.
One was a fruitish drink like a Sprite or a 7-Up,
yep.
And the other one was a cola.
Or a Dr.
Like
Peppery kind of thing. What was Tab?
It was a diet cola.
Was it diet cola?
It was the first diet cola.
I think it had used saccharin, right?
Yeah.
It was you know, as a child trying to understand what a calorie was, to me, a calorie was like an asterisk. and it floated around in the can. I thought if you just drank everything and left it at the bottom, it might just stay in the bottom, so it'd be zero calories.
It's all backwash and calories in the bottom there.
It's just one calorie. It's just one calorie of backwash, and I totally got over. So, like, if you can't get it all the way down to one calorie, why isn't it zero calories? Just scoop that calorie out of there. Can't you get a filter and just find it? All right, Groovehouse. Who do we have up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a quick question for you. I bought a pre-owned iPad 2 from a gentleman who, I guess, got it from his work. Now there's like there's an app on there I'd like to get rid of. I'd like to reset all settings or erase all content and settings, but they're asking for a password to do that. Is there any way I can bypass that?
Wow. So it's... I don't know if there's a way to bypass that or not.
I looked on Google and I checked YouTube and they had a way to do it, but it didn't work. And when you press the app and they start to jiggle, there's supposed to be like an X. It doesn't have that X. You cannot.
There's a setting. There's a setting that will turns off the X, and
you don't get X's on
the pre-installed stuff.
On pre-installed stuff, and it's possible that if that device was had. I think it was the acronym MDM, Mobile mm-hmm. Device Management, through his business, mm-hmm. that they might have made it where that's an app that you couldn't delete.
And they might have made it where you didn't have the ability to delete any app. So there's a setting that
would
actually...
have to, like, completely wipe the device back to factory.
Right, but he can't do that because it's also password protected to right. where when you go to reset it, it's... So, yeah... So what we got to figure out is if there's a way to bypass.
Are you trying to do it on the phone? Or are you trying to do it?
It's an iPad. He's trying to wipe it back to factory fresh.
But have you tried connecting it through iTunes as opposed to doing it on the device itself?
I did connect it to iTunes,
and it wants the same thing.
It didn't do it.
How many times have you tried it?
Twice.
Here's the deal. I don't know if this is still good, but at least a year and a half ago, if you go, this is on everymac.com, but if you actually, after 10 bad attempts, it will allow you to reset the whole device.
It's possible.
It's up to like 12 attempts.
Was it 2 or 12?
No. If it has a password.
I tried it through iTunes twice, but as far as putting the passcode, I did notice that, and it takes like an hour. It lets you redo it again, so it's up to about 11 or 12 bad attempts, and it didn't do anything.
It says you can configure your device to erase itself after 10 consecutive incorrect password attempts.
But the default is that it doesn't. But you have to configure it previously.
That has to be set.
So the idea is that's a security measure to where if somebody tries to break into it, it'll wipe itself.
For example, my iPhone does that because I set it to do that. If somebody puts in a bad password 10 times, my phone wipes itself.
I'm going to be quiet and play with my Android device.
Wow. So I guess the person that you bought it from doesn't know the passcode.
I got it from Craigslist, and there's no way for me to get touch with that yet.
So we don't even know.
It may even be stolen.
It might even be stolen.
Well,
here's how you find out. Go to the Apple Store.
Huh? But I don't want him to confiscate it.
Have you tried where you go into settings on the iPad to reset and erase all contents and settings, and that's where it asks for the password?
Do you happen to know what version of the iOS it's running?
I believe the most it did upload that when I did it on iTunes.
Okay, so you're up past 7.2 then. I think
he was honest because it is like a business app on it for like a business if he was working.
So some poor guy got his iPad stolen. This guy on Craigslist sold it to you.
Hope that's not what happened.
It sounds like it might have happened. I mean, if I was selling my iPad, I would certainly reset it before I sold it to you.
But like your other friend said, he said it was pre-installed, so maybe he couldn't do it either. Maybe I'd have to live with it, right?
Or if that guy was mad at the company and just left and had it and wanted to sell it.
Oh, well, that could be. That may be.
Well, unfortunately, if it's a stolen iPad, you may be in trouble trying to get it to work. If it's legit, it's possible that someone at the Apple Store could help you.
Okay. Maybe it's like signed out as though they don't use them anymore and I can just take it up there?
You could take it. You could maybe schedule some time with that and see if they have some kind of way to reset it.
Okay. But
my fear is that they might run the serial number on it. I don't know if does Apple do that? Do they check to see if?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I should find a local store, maybe outside of Apple first.
Well, you could try calling. There's a place down. It's called Houston iPhone Repair.
Okay.
And it's just a one man shop down on I-10 near the Beltway, near Beltway 8 on West Houston, and he does
like
iPad.
City Center. Okay. Huh?
Yeah. What do you got?
The thing that you said you tried online and it didn't work, was that putting it into DFU mode by any chance?
Yeah, it was like
device firmware update.
It was
mode.
Like turn your device off, plug into the iOS, and then it pops up by itself. It comes back on. And I tried that a couple times.
Did you hold the power button down and the home button down for 10 seconds and they both came up? Okay.
Yeah.
And you couldn't restore from there?
Mm-hmm. But okay. So if it's not able to, I can just use it as a regular pad? Does that just have to live with that little app?
Probably. I mean, if everything else works.
Yeah,
if you go to add other apps, it's going to ask you for a password for that. Have you set up your Apple ID on it?
No, I have not.
Before you can install anything else, you'll have to get it to take your Apple ID.
Okay. Well, I just got this right around Thanksgiving, so I will set that all up.
You know, are you in Houston?
Yes, I am.
Bring that to the Geek Gathering on Friday. Can you come to the Geek Gathering on Friday?
I don't know, but is it at the station?
No, it's at Cone's. The information's on our website. We have a gathering over at Cone's in Midtown the first Friday of every month, and that's coming up the day after tomorrow.
Yeah, because there may be people there who know more about this than we do.
Dwight's going to be in a white shirt with a red carnation.
Yeah, it's look on geekradio.com for information. It starts about 7. Bring that. I'd love to kind of
now they say that according to this one page I'm reading, it says Apple staff cannot unlock an iPad for you without restoring the iPad. So there's apparently a way to do it. Like if you connect it to iTunes. You could click on if you put it in iTunes and you click on the restore option.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried that?
I don't think I've clicked on it while it's been plugged into iTunes.
No, I mean inside of iTunes, I think there's a way to click on restore to tell it to reset it.
Yeah, it does do that. It does that automatically. It says it notices device and then it takes it. So yes, I did do that. And it didn't work.
Yeah, it wants a password. It still wants the password.
But I'll tell you what, I'll just come by on Friday if I can make it. At 7:00.
If you can make it on Friday, but also you might want to just call the Apple store that's nearest you and say, here's the situation. I bought this off Craigslist, and I believe it's legit, but I need to get it reset if that's possible. And just call them. Don't go in there with it.
Right.
Just call them and say, is this something that one of your people can help me with?
Is the computer that you're connecting it to, that's iTunes, a notebook computer?
Yes, that's correct.
Bring it with you.
If you come to the Geek Gathering, bring that with you, too.
Okay, I definitely will. I appreciate the invitation, and you guys have a happy holiday.
All right, happy holidays. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And $100 in unmarked bills.
it comes down to this thing where I've always said, buying secondhand hardware is not something people should do if they don't have a little bit of savvy and willingness to work hard to get it to work.
And to ask the right questions before you take
ownership of it.
Apple seems a little bit harder to work with, too. Whereas, an Android device, you can get, throw whatever ROM you want. It seems like Apple makes it a little bit harder to
break. Well, what's interesting is that he can get to the apps and stuff. All right, well, listen, we got to take a short station business break here and then come back and do the second half of the show. So we're going to make our way out of here for a few minutes. We hope you stick around. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Imagine hearing KPFT even when a thunderstorm has knocked out power to our transmitter. Imagine listening to your favorite KPFT programs when you're out of town. You can. You can listen online with your computer. Go to kpft.org, then click on one of the Listen Live links at the very top of our homepage. We have medium and high fidelity links there for both our regular analog channel and our HD2 channel. See the links at the top of kpft.org. There's more. Imagine being able to hear any KPFT program at any time that fits your schedule. Go to archive.kpft.org and listen or download any show from the last 2 weeks. For information on subscribing to your favorite show, to download it automatically to your computer, click on the podcast help link at archive.kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Word Women Organize to Resist and Defend is a grassroots feminist organization that is dedicated to building the struggle for women's rights and equality for all. Word believes in taking to the streets, independent of the politicians of either major party. Throughout history, the gains that women have made have been won through militant action. Word wants to revive this kind of struggle by uniting all women to defend our rights. In addition, Word fights for equality for all, fighting racism, anti-LGBT bigotry and the oppression of the poor are part and parcel of our struggle. No woman can be free while others are oppressed. For more information about women organized to resist and defend, you can visit defendwomensrights.org. You're tuned in to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Having teeth out.
Barrett needed oral surgery after Cyber Monday.
Cyber first.
Don't ask.
It's not
Cyber
good,
first,
yeah.
Then oral.
How?
Cyber Monday and oral Tuesday?
Something like that.
I just wanted to lightly touch that one. Not hammer away on it. Hey,
Trumped right through the mud.
All right.
Help it.
Second half of Technology Bites coming your way. The phone number here is 713-526-5738. We've got two calls in the queue, but we got plenty of open lines. If you want to participate in the second hour of the show, we invite you to dial 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to start it off with Dimitri.
Dimitri, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
My question is about a laptop battery usage. I use laptop mostly as a workstation, but I just occasionally disconnect it. But in order to prolong the battery life, what should I do? To just leave it in or take it out when it's sitting as a workstation?
When I use a laptop as a workstation, I let it charges, and it charges all the way up, and then I have plenty of people at my office that use laptops as a workstation. There's no real need that I've found to drain the battery to extend the life. The battery will just lose its ability to hold a charge over time. They're usually good. They're best up to about a year. And then after they get to be 2 and 3 years old, sometimes you're looking at replacing the battery. They just don't hold a charge very long.
Okay.
But I suppose if you're not using, you could take the battery out, I suppose.
Some notebooks will not work if you do that.
Yeah. A lot of them will.
And the danger is if you ever do anything to pull that power cord, your laptop goes off because you don't have the battery in there.
Right.
Just, you lose everything. Or if the power flickers, you know, if you don't have it on a UPS, you'd lose all your work.
Yeah, the nice thing about a laptop with a battery in it on a docking station or hooked up to a charger is that if the power flickers, the computer doesn't shut down. So if you wanted to run it without a battery, you could get a UPS or something if that's a concern for you. So you might be able to extend the battery life if you're not using that often by not charging it and depleting it. I suppose that would extend the life.
Heat kills batteries more than anything else. So, you know, what you could do is just set it down, you know, at the end of the day, put your hand under there, and hopefully the battery's cool. You know, if the battery's hot and it's like, you know, trickle charging or whatever, then you might want to, you know, maybe think about taking it out. But if that battery's cool at the end of the day, you should be fine.
Uh-huh. Is there anything in the power management settings that I could use to prolong the life of the battery when it's plugged in?
Not that I can think of. No.
No, most of those just act and how the laptop runs while it's draining.
Right. The power settings just tell it whether or not it's going to shut the monitor off or shut down different devices if they're not used after a certain period of time. Doesn't tell it whether or not to run it on battery or not run it on battery. How old is the laptop?
Well, it's actually, I have a laptop right now, which I use in that mode, and the battery died pretty soon, and I'm thinking of getting another new laptop, and I'm just deciding how should I proceed with the...
How soon did the battery die? A year?
A couple of years, I guess.
A couple of years is about standard for a battery. On a Windows based or an Intel based laptop like that. I mean, I know the Macs do a little bit better job because they don't let you change the battery yourself. But on a PC battery, 2 to 3 years is usually about it that I've seen.
So even if it's all connected all the time, after like 2 years, it'll die.
It doesn't die, but it. Over time, it continuously holds a charge for less and less, and eventually you'll be down to like an hour or 30 minutes, and at that point you'll need to. But, you know, Jay talked about that Macs do well. I've got a 2009 MacBook Pro, and I regularly get about 3 hours still time on it. So,
yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, if it's a concern, too, you can find aftermarket batteries for a lot. You know, as a computer's been out for a while, there are companies that will make aftermarket batteries, and they're a lot less expensive than buying from the vendor. So you might be able to find a battery for a laptop that's 3 or 4 years old for under $100.
A lot of them even come like high capacity. So you pay like 20% more, and they might have a couple more cells, and it's thicker and it's heavier, but you get like, you know, another hour or two out of it.
Right.
Okay, great.
Well, why don't you get a desktop to use as a desktop?
Well, because, you know, once a month or maybe, you know, on the weekend I will take it someplace, and I kind of like the laptop setup because, you know, otherwise I would need to have two devices, but with a good laptop it just...
Well, I've never done any experiments on it because typically I use a laptop the way a laptop's meant to be used, which means I'm using it on the battery a good amount of the time, but I suppose that if you were only going to travel once a week away from your power supply, you could keep the battery out. As long as the battery's not draining and charging up and down, then it might prolong the life of it, but I've never done any tests. I wouldn't know how to tell you if that's going to be true or not, but you might be able to extend the life of the battery by not using it.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure whether it makes sense.
It makes some sense because what happens with a battery is that as it is charged and as it drains, the life of the battery just decreases. It loses its ability to hold a charge. They talk about, I don't know what the term is. There's a term for when you charge a battery and then deplete it.
Cycle it.
Right.
And a battery is rated for so many cycles of how many times it will charge and deplete. So if you're not running it through those cycles, it's possible that it should last longer because you have not, you know, in other words, it's like an odometer for the battery.
Right. You're reducing the number of cycles.
Right. So if you're not actually cycling the battery, it may very well hang on to its life. But I don't know. What I don't know is if you take the battery out and it's charged, it'll maintain the charge for a while, but it'll deplete.
It'll slowly trickle down.
Lose the charge even though it's not even being used. And what I don't know is if you run into any problems with a battery that just depletes and isn't charged, you know, immediately or soon after it's been depleted. A fully depleted battery sitting on a shelf.
Bad, yeah. You want to store it. Like if you ever have a laptop battery, you want to store it with, I think, like 30 or 40% charge in there. And you'll notice, like, when they ship laptops, when you'll
get
it
partially
up, and they're about, you know, like a third charge.
So if you were to take the battery out, and it completely depleted in a month, and then you tried to charge it again, it might actually do more damage to the battery.
Yeah, LiPo batteries, they've got a charging circuit in there, and if they get below a certain point, you actually can't charge them through regular means. So if you run the laptop battery down to where it would normally cut off on its own, and then you let it sit there for 2 or 3 months, it can actually deplete beyond the point where it's safe to charge. Right. You can kill a battery like that.
One thing that you may want to do, since you have a Windows machine, is you can download, there's a lot of free battery health monitors, and it will show you the current state of your battery, how many cycles it has left, and what amount of time you can expect to get from it. There are features, similar software for the Mac, but you can easily find them for Windows as well.
Okay. Well, I think the conclusion is just to not do anything special.
The laptop as it's intended to be used, and be prepared to buy a new battery or carry a charger around with you if it gets to be too old.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. Good luck. Thanks for your call.
And don't install a laptop health monitor.
Hang up, Barrett.
Oh, I thought he was going to talk to the caller.
He could talk to him after.
I was going to make a wisecrack. I was to don't install a battery health monitor that steals your passwords. A free one.
That is a wisecrack. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Thomas.
Thomas, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, how are you doing, sir?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I would like to be able to watch the internet through my left brain in a den. And I need something stationary, so I don't need a laptop. I think a desktop would be like overkill. Is there anything on the market that I can just, that will just provide?
When you say watch the internet, like you just
watch internet programming, like YouTube or lectures or movies or what have you, my flash screen.
Well, you can get, like, I know that there are, for example, there are Blu-ray devices that have Wi-Fi capability and have apps for watching things like YouTube and Amazon and so forth. That would be one way to do it. But it depends on the content that you're wanting to watch and whether or not there's an app for it. So a lot of the major streaming services have apps, and a lot of the smart TVs even come with apps built into the TV. But if you've got a big TV but it's not a smart TV, you just need a device that will connect to it. So you have things like Roku. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for example, I can hook up in another room. I can hook up my desktop to,
You can hook up a computer.
If you want to have a full computer experience, you need to hook up a full computer to your TV. If you just want to watch certain things, it depends. Like, you can get an Apple TV, and they kind of heavily curate the apps that are available. So you can watch PBS programming now. You can watch some MLS stuff. You can watch NBA stuff. You can watch Hulu or Hulu Plus, I think. You can watch Netflix.
HBO Go.
There's a few things. If you get a Roku, they have a lot more apps available of what you can watch. But you still can't just watch anything you want, just like you would in a web browser, and go to any site, anywhere, anytime that I'm aware of.
Now, you could, I mean, if you're worried about the computer in terms of overkill, you can get a very limited, small footprint desktop style computer that you can, if you've got room for it, or you could get a Mac Mini. Mac Mini's got an extremely small footprint, and you can connect a wireless mouse and keyboard.
What about those new Intel ones? Could you use it for that? Like, they're about the size of a Raspberry Pi, but it's an Intel processor.
I'm not familiar with them. I haven't paid any attention.
They're like $150, I think. You might be able to use that, and it's really small, like hockey puck about.
The probably, you know, if you're interested in a wide variety of things, the Roku may be your best bet. One of the things it has, for example, is Amazon on demand. So Amazon is very competitive, say, with iTunes for renting movies, so you can rent almost anything. There is the local Aereo service that's available that lets you stream to your computer or to a TV. Broadcast television is available on Roku. And Roku is available for as inexpensive as, I think, like $35 or $40 to start. So, and then it's like 45, 50, and 100. And so, you know, you might look at that.
So the bottom line is there are devices that are small enough that can fit in the confined spaces, and also I can get them relatively inexpensively.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, Apple TV is a great device for that kind of thing because it gives you access to a lot of streaming video apps like YouTube and so forth. So that's kind of nice. But Roku, I think, is probably the most well-rounded small footprint device for getting streaming content.
Totally standalone, yeah.
The one thing, though, that you need to make sure of is that you need to have a really good internet connection. If you've got, like, low-ball DSL, I think you need to have probably at least 10 megabit download.
Yeah, I got the high-speed Comcast. I don't know.
All right. You're fine. You're fine with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it looks good on your computer, it'll look good on your TV.
So that's real cool. I could get that at Best Buy or places like that.
Yeah.
Or online.
I don't know about Best Buy for sure.
Yeah,
on the
Best
Roku.
Buy.
Yeah,
I've seen them there. Yeah.
You get them online.
Yeah, online. Yeah. Micro Center.
If you've got a lot of your own content, then probably having a computer and installing something like XMBC or something like that is a good, good way to go.
Roku has a Plex app.
Does it?
And yeah.
It let you play your local, own local movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Plex. You can run Plex on the PC.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm well behind the times. I'm not aware of all this stuff. I appreciate your information.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. All right. 713-526-5573. I got a nice batch of calls in the queue, so that's good.
Yay.
All right.
Who was it that just made their... Oh, Boxy. Boxy started making their own device.
Boxy got bought by Samsung and is going away.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, nice device they once had.
It didn't seem like it was a real good price, though, to me when it came out.
No, they had the Boxy box that was around for a while. They quit selling that. Then they started putting their software OEM on other hardware devices, and then Samsung bought them, and they shut everything down.
Oh, okay. Because I installed Boxy several years ago on a first-generation Apple TV, XMBC and Boxy.
Oh, yeah, right, the software.
Yeah.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Daniel.
Daniel, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Stuff.
Yeah, stuff. All right, so anyway, those are all great devices that you guys named and et cetera, but people make it so complicated, and I knew the companies would make all this money off of the idea of trying to get a TV to run as a computer. You know, two, 3 years ago, it came out the TV that was a computer, and you set it up in your screen, in your TV, you know, in your living room, et cetera, you know. I have my 40-inch flat screen hooked up via VGA to my laptop. Laptop extended to hard drives, 3-4 terabytes et cetera. And full of blank, you know, and do whatever you want. No commercials, no advertisement, no nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and I've been doing it for like 2-3 years already.
Consider yourself to be technically savvy?
Honestly, I put myself in the moderate category. There's a lot of stuff you guys talk about that's way over my head. But at the same time, that specific thing, I mean, such as the guy who was talking about the projector, and I was just like, oh, we'll just get a laptop and a VGA cable.
Although VGA, are you going to an HD TV?
Yeah, well...
you're not going to get HD content with a VGA connection.
Yeah, and at the time, the laptop, that's all it had, and I don't know if it would have supported any, you know, VGA, or, you know, was needed the VGA cable capability, because the laptop was a good 8-10 years old. Yeah, just got replaced.
Yeah, DVI out would give you better quality HDMI out, which, an older laptop would not have. It might have DVI, but it's not going to have HDMI.
Ooh, DVI, what is that?
Digital Video Interface.
See, I just got a new HP for Hanukkah, and it's the HP with the 500 GB, 4 TB RAM. I forget what the.
You got a nice new computer.
Oh, I'm sorry. What I was trying to say was that.
Has it got HDMI or DVI?
Yeah, I don't know what ports it has.
Yeah, is it So normally it's kind of become a standard. The VGA will be blue, kind of a royal blue. DVI outs will be white. And HDMI is an odd shape, so it's just kind of a thin hole.
Looks okay. Like a long USB.
Yeah, it kind
of
looks like a wide micro USB.
I gotcha. Okay, cool.
All right.
All right, sounds good, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for your call. Bye. All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with George.
George, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Fine.
I have a tablet computer. It's a couple of years old. It runs Android. I've never heard of anybody talking about doing this, since some people say you can't. It runs Android, I think, 2.2.1. Can it be upgraded to a more modern operating system?
What is the tablet?
It's a cruise tablet.
Did you buy it at Walmart or something?
Something like that. Off Woot, actually.
Yeah.
If you're not getting OTA, if you're not getting over-the-air upgrades supported through that, your only other option is to go and try and flash a ROM on there, but that's kind of tough to do, and you'd definitely kind of be on your own on that.
The thing is, a lot of those like lower-end, cheaper laptops, like whatever OS they put on it,
that's it.
That's really all you're ever going to get.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that's all I need to know. Thank you very much.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call. All right. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately...
Groovehouse just went to the site for Cruise, which is CRUZ, and maybe for some of them there's Android firmware updates, but I don't know what his model is.
You have to check your model and then upgrade for it.
Yeah, you can go to cruz.com?
Cruisereader.com.
Cruisereader.com?
Yeah, it's like a little tablet.
Yeah.
The fact that it's called a reader, though, doesn't instill a lot of hope.
Well. No. I mean, unfortunately, when you buy the budget ones, it's...
It looks like it's just running Android.
Android 2.2 is now available. So you could bump up from 2.1 whatever to 2.2.
He said he was 2.2 something. Yeah, 2.2.1.
Okay. Well, the deal is, too, is on a low-end tablet like that, you may not want to upgrade the OS because it might be too taxing for the hardware.
That's very true.
So, you know, even though it might have the capability of running a newer version of the OS, you slap that on there, and all of a sudden you have performance issues.
Yeah, just go to their website and check their support, and that'll tell you, for most devices.
Right.
You know.
What was 2.2? Jelly Bean? What was 2.2?
That was Froyo, wasn't it?
Was it frozen yogurt?
I think it was Froyo. One of the things about Android 4.4, that one of the goals for KitKat, as it's called, was to make it run on older devices with less memory. I don't know if it'd go back that far, but that's one of the that was one of the goals of it.
Mavericks did that, Mountain Lion couldn't install on some devices. They actually went back some with Mavericks so that it actually would install on some devices that Mountain Lion wouldn't install on.
Yeah, Froyo.
Yeah, Dwight was right.
Froyo.
Froyo.
I hate that name.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Froyo. Yolo. You only live Froyo.
You know, I recently found out that
Froyo Baggins,
that YOLO is actually stands for Youth Obeying Lucifer's Orders.
Lol. yeah, Lucifer out loud. So I'm
sure. Loser online.
That's a good one. Smackdown. All right. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
Did you just get a Froyo update? What's going on in there, Claire? What's going on in there?
Somebody favorited one of my tweets.
It's me.
Cut me some slack.
Jack.
And you too. Tube.
Making new plans, Dan.
That's actually what I was referencing.
Yes. All right, Groovehouse,
yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we are going to speak with Scott.
Scott, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hi.
I got myself an iPhone recently.
Congratulations.
What model?
The 5C.
Okay, 5C. So that was that on Craigslist, or did you buy it from the store?
I bought it from a Verizon store.
Awesome.
And did the whole upfront retail transaction.
Yeah, all right.
All right, but this is my first time owning an Apple device of any sort. I've had experience with the computers. I've had experience looking at other people's iPhones and whatnot.
Do you feel like your life is about to become more magical?
That's why I'm calling you. I'm not
sure. I'm not sure what I feel.
Well, here, I've always heard that Apple is a lot of Steve Jobs' personality, which means you do it his way, and that's the only way. And what I discovered is all these wonderful apps, they have to, it seems, pass through the Apple Store on my phone.
That's true.
There is not.
Oh, okay.
Unless you jailbreak it and install, I forgot, Cygwin or... There's a way you can sideload apps, but
yeah.
No, by default, the App Store is the only way.
What the haters refer to as the walled garden.
Yes.
And that there's an ecosystem that is the Apple OS. And so when you have an iPhone or an iPad, for example, the only thing you can install on there are apps from the Apple App Store. Now, some people say that, well, that's just too limiting, and that's not fair, and that's Steve Jobs is evil. But there's another side of that that says, hey, look, these apps are designed to work on the device, on the hardware that's there. It's been approved. And it's also kind of checked out to make sure that it's not some kind of password stealing.
The garden's nice and manicured.
The opposite of the walled garden is the, hey, this app I just installed just stole all my passwords.
Right.
Okay, well, I'm not a big complainer. I just haven't signed up for it yet because before I gave the NSA my data, I wanted to make sure that
they've already got that.
And, you got a you just signed up. You just signed up with Verizon. What do you think? your information's out there, but you know when
you're talking to us on the phone, have you.
So when you sign up for, obviously you need an Apple ID to be able to use the phone effectively. I'm sure you already have that, right?
I must, but frankly, I've been using the phone for months without even remembering what the ID is. So that's because I've been waiting to talk to someone like you who could say, yes, you've got to go through Apple Store, even if it's a free app.
And granted, there are some rather cool things out there for the iPhone for the people that have scaled the wall. There's a thing called jailbreaking an iPhone, which is basically a way of modifying the device, which voids the warranty. Some people don't care about that, but it allows you to have more open access to the device where you can actually, Flick did use the term sideload, or where you could install an app using a different method than using the App Store to install it. And there's some fairly cool modifications that are out there, but it's a bit of a risky world. Like I said, you do void the warranty and you do put yourself kind of in the wild. You don't know what you're getting. So you have to pay attention to the communities that kind of promote this, new open lifestyle for the iOS. And you can do some very cool things, but there are also people out there that would take advantage of that and exploit people who attempt to, go this route with their iOS device.
And the other thing with jailbreaking is if Apple sends out an update for your phone,
it'll unjailbreak it?
It'll unjailbreak it and you'll be back to square one. Or some people have had their phones bricked when that occurs.
Right.
So you certainly can do it.
You can't
the walled garden, as a proponent of the walled garden, I have to say, the water's fine.
Come on in.
Yeah, I've had iPhones for 5 or 6 years now, I think, or maybe more than that. I don't remember how long. Pretty long time. And I've never jailbroken any of them. And I personally haven't found that I've been unable to do things that I really, really needed and wanted to do.
All right. Well, there's a couple things then. I'm certainly going to go through the Apple Store to see and get it all ready. And the first two apps I want to get, and I wanted to know if you have any recommendations, I want something like a cookie cleaner or a web washer. So when I'm finished, I press a button and all transactions or whatever somehow gets erased. Is there any application that is sort of a cookie cleaner? I don't care if I go to the site.
Well, that's built into.
And they ask for new data. It's built into the phone.
It's built into the phone. You don't need an app for that. It's in Safari in the settings. You can clear everything in there. I believe also if you download Chrome.
Well, I was going to say if you installed Chrome, it might give you more options than
or private browsing under. Yeah.
If you always do that, if you're always you always clean all that out and you don't want it, then you could change your Safari browser to use, you know, incognito browsing, which means it doesn't keep any of that stuff.
All right.
As you go along using it the whole time. You don't have to go back later and clear the history or okay. any of that. It just doesn't show any of what you've looked at.
Correct me if I'm wrong or if you're thinking of this a different way, but for me, the idea of cleaning out cookies and clearing out web histories and things like that is the idea that I don't want somebody to sit down at my computer and be able to pull that data up.
Well, there's something like both of that from my perspective, that bit and just general security. But you told me what I need to know, which is check Safari default. In fact, I did go through, I recall now, and switch a lot of that stuff.
Well, you can also go online and research a little bit about, you know, securing your iPhone. You want to make sure that you've got it passcode protected so that you have to enter a four-digit PIN to even get into the phone. That'll help secure it. And there are other websites dedicated to talk about any apps available or some fine-tuning some of the security settings on the phone to help protect your
phone. All right. You know, there's only one other question, the app that I'd like. It seems like my default on Safari is the three big search monsters, and I favor DuckDuckGo, and I can't seem to get it to take DuckDuckGo as my default search engine on Safari. Is that what your experience?
With Safari, when I bring up Safari...
it's Google. That's a default. Or Bing or whatever the other one is.
Yeah, it has fixed defaults, and you can't add an addition. You can't add a substitute search engine beyond that.
Mm,
but you may be able to in Chrome. I would suggest downloading Chrome. And I think you may be able to set custom search.
The only thing one of the things that I don't like with Chrome, unfortunately, is that it cannot be set as the default browser. So anytime you get an email or something that has a link in it and you click that, it's going to fire up Safari.
Although increasingly more and more, I've seen more and more apps that actually work with Chrome and will open links in Chrome instead of Safari. I'm seeing that, including non-Google apps.
Hmm. All right. Thanks for that. Yeah, I'm happy with the phone and the experience. It's just that I'm always looking for a back door, and Apple just doesn't seem to give you one to make things right. But the people who have used them, like I just heard, they own them 4 or 5 years, seem to be pretty happy. So, yeah, I'm happy to come to that warm water, too, I guess.
Well, enjoy. I mean, that's all, you know, there's always, you know, participating in the online world requires a little bit of give and take. And
nicely put. All right.
Did you have something?
I was going to say, it's a lot of hoops to jump through. It's 12 steps, but if you go to duck.co and go to their help thing, there is an article for mobile Safari iOS, and it tells you how to kick out Google as a default search engine and get DuckDuckGo in there.
Oh,
but like I said, it's a bunch of click-in and it's a bunch of instructions. But Lifehacker has an article, and then duck.co actually has the article, too.
That's it, then. Thanks, gentlemen.
All right, appreciate your call.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
Yes.
Bye. I was going to say I did think of something that annoyed me with iOS.
Uh-oh.
That I really wanted,
hater?
I really wanted to do that it wouldn't let me.
All right.
And I had to wait like a year or a year and a half or something before they finally put out an update that did allow you to do it, which was I'm sure this was Steve Jobs' control. And on some level, it kind of makes sense because it's almost like brand identity for the phone. They locked it down where you could not set any custom text message tones. You could set custom ringtones, although it was a pain to do it because you had to put it in a special format and put it into iTunes and then transfer it over to the phone, but you could do it. But with text messages, you couldn't. You couldn't do it. And then finally, they put out an update where you could make custom text message tones. Which now it's easy to do it. But But yeah, so that was actually one thing that I was used to be annoyed by, because I had always had custom ringtone, custom text tone on all my previous phones. And I really wanted that, and the iPhone did not allow you to do it. But it does now, so it's not a problem.
All right. 713-526-5738. We've got about a half hour left in the show. We've got two calls in the queue and plenty of open lines and plenty of time. So if you wanted to be on the air with us this evening, you can dial 713-526-KPFT and speak with Groovehouse, and he'll get you prepped and ready to be on the air like he's done for our next caller. Who's our next caller, Groovehouse?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Aaron.
Aaron, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, Jay and the rest of the team, good evening.
Good evening.
I have a sort of a stupid question, but I hope it's not stupid. I just got a used desktop that runs Windows 7.
Okay.
And the place that I bought it from, they installed the free version of AVG 2014, or I think it's 2014.
Okay.
And my question was, Jay, do I need anything else? Because on your website, it says you like the malware, the anti-malware thing.
Well, okay, here's the deal. A good antivirus, here's what I believe to be true for a Windows computer. All Windows computers should be running a good antivirus program. AVG is considered to be a good antivirus program, and it kind of does the lion's share of protecting the computer from viruses. You know, checks your email and all of that stuff to make sure there's no malicious files. Unfortunately, no antivirus program that I have encountered will block all malware. So if you are the kind of computer user who finds themselves getting infected with malware, you need to be aware of tools like Malwarebytes and the other things that I list at geekradio.com under the spywares link, so that you can be able to clean those things off if you accidentally get infected with them. The way that people tend to get infected with spyware is not necessarily the way, like a virus vector. What they do is they inadvertently install a piece of software that comes bundled with something malicious, and they're actually, you know, telling the computer to install it so the antivirus doesn't alert and doesn't block it. So every once in a while, you have to go through your computer, if you see it behaving badly, and scan it for malware that you might have installed accidentally.
Okay. So if I'm not doing that, I don't need to run the anti-malware thing every day?
No. I don't see any reason to do that. I think that, you know, again, it really kind of falls down to whether or not you are getting, if you're running into trouble frequently or not. If you're not finding yourself infected with spyware all the time, then, you know, maybe scanning once a week, or maybe scanning once a month, or maybe just being aware of the symptoms. Like if all of your web browser searches start getting redirected to questionable sites, and you go, hey, that's a sign of spyware.
Okay.
Let me check it. Let me run a scan and see if I've got anything or need to clean something up.
I'm a little paranoid. I'm becoming a little OCD. And I'm checking daily, and even though, because I got hacked, my Hotmail account got hacked, my Yahoo account got hacked, and now people are telling me that I should switch over to Gmail, and I haven't done that yet. But if I'm just browsing and not really downloading any stuff, AVG should be good enough. AVG, and I also have that Windows Defender, or called Windows Essentials.
Yeah, those two should be pretty much enough, but you know, you might want to have a copy of Malwarebytes hanging around just in case you need to run a scan.
Okay, but the two are more than adequate. I mean,
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you have to educate yourself. The best protection against this kind of infection and hacking and compromising is just being careful, being aware of how this stuff gets delivered to your system. If you get an email from somebody that says click this link or download this file, question that.
Yeah.
Say, you know, why would this person be sending it to me? Do I need to look at it? Let me think about this for a minute and say, you know, if they don't give me a good explanation like that says, you know, hey, Aaron, I just saw this funny thing and I thought you'd appreciate it because you like birds or something. And maybe that's something you click on. But a lot of these viruses come in and they look like they're from somebody you know.
And I know. That's why what happened to me once. Yeah. I did that. And then secondly, I got a allegedly I got an email from the FBI. And, you know, this is post 9/11 world, so I got paranoid and I opened it. And yeah. I said, wait a minute, why would the FBI be sending me an email?
They wouldn't. The IRS won't send you an email either.
Yeah, and I get emails like that from the UPS that you have a parcel, and I never ordered something, so why would the UPS be sending me an email?
Yeah, those are common methods that hackers.
Is that like what they call phishing?
Phishing, exactly. That's okay. Exactly what that is.
So I don't even open them anymore. I just delete them.
That's good. That's good practice. So those are the kind of good practices that will help you in the long haul.
Okay. One quick question, sir. I live in Spring Branch, and I've got AT&T U-verse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really happy with them. I'm not going to bore you with the details, but we've got a bundle. So we've got everything. They've got everything. Our telephone, our home telephone, our cell, our TV and internet. And I just feel that it's really expensive, but I don't know. It seems like they're the only game in town in our part of town.
Well, between DSL and Comcast, those are your two major high-speed providers. And I will say that, you know, it's easy to be unhappy with any of them. I'm mad as heck at Comcast right now. Their service to my house has been subpar for the last several weeks, actually for over a month, and I've been struggling with them. And I've thought about switching, but, you know, you could just as easily pick up problems when you go to another provider.
What some of my friends have said, that they all suck.
And it's just really how much energy if you're tired enough of it. Like, I've finally just said, you know what, I'm going to keep calling them and keep having them send a tech back to my house and give them, you know, make them make this right. And I've got a tech coming out tomorrow, and I might give up, but I don't. I like Comcast personally. I like the high speed. I like the 50 megabits. You don't get that with a DSL. But maybe you can consider unbundling a little bit.
Yeah, it's not just that there are technical issues. I just feel that they're not being sincere. They're not being honest. They tell me something. They tell me something else. I'm just really, really, really frustrated. It's very frustrating. But my question was, I heard someone was saying about Hulu and Roku, and I don't know if that's something that I should look into.
Well, if Dwight,
for my TV. Yeah,
well, Dwight has done what is called cord cutting, where he is not subscribing to Comcast for his television. Or to UVerse for his television.
Right. I had UVerse and I dropped it. I had UVerse television and Comcast internet. I kept the Comcast internet, dropped UVerse television, and am using Apple TV primarily and secondarily Roku to watch the TV shows I want to watch. But I'm not a normal TV watcher.
You don't watch a lot of stations, a lot of channels.
Well, I tend to watch. I watch a lot of cable dramas. And I like to, and we rent movies. And so I found that by dropping this and by buying series as subscriptions, the series themselves on iTunes or Amazon, I can actually save a lot of money.
You have services like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu, which will get you a lot of content. You won't get all of it.
Then
you
can are you saving any money, sir? Are
yes.
you saving money?
He's saving a ton of money. He's
yes.
Okay. Money.
I spend about, on the content I'm buying, I spend about maybe $400 a year. I was spending about $1,400 a year.
Yeah. Our bill is about $300 a month for this bundle.
And that's high.
That's way high.
It's not worth the $300.
That's way high. You can pick out 20 different series and buy season passes and rent tons of movies and do all kinds of stuff for that.
You could also renegotiate if you take a look at what.
Yes, sir.
Talk to him. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. And Jay, the problem is if the system goes down, sir, everything goes down.
Yeah.
The TV doesn't work. The internet doesn't work.
I'm going through that right now. I'm going through that right now where my. Fortunately, I haven't. I've got the bundle that gives me phone, television, and internet from Comcast. Fortunately, I still have my landline. I've just bought the bundle because they actually had such a good price on it. If I bought all three, I'm not even using the phone service out of the deal because it's such a good deal. I negotiated a good bundle with them.
but it's all down. When it's down, I don't have any TV and I don't have any internet. And my cell phone continues to work and I have my landline. But yeah, it all goes down. It goes down and it's unfortunate. But, you know, who's to say if you get your services through different providers, you know, you could get your internet from one company, your phone from another company.
Sir.
You still lose them both. It's tough. That's, you know, consider what's important. For me, the most important thing I have is the ability to make a phone call in an emergency. I mean, I can read a book. I can listen to a record, but I need to have a phone. So I have a cell phone. I think most of us do. You probably have a cell phone, right?
Yes, sir. I'm talking to you on one right now.
Cell phone. So like if you need to get a hold of somebody or you got to make an emergency phone call to get some assistance, that's covered. And if your TV works, that's great. You can watch TV. If it doesn't work, that's fine. You can read a book. So look at it in terms of those priorities on that, and make sure that you have what you need, and then explore the other options. Explore your TV. So do you want, what do you need in terms of channels?
So that's the thing that I'm not sure. I need to do a little bit of research, but like, for example, I like, Natural Geographic and Discovery and the History Channel.
See, with all of that, you're going to need cable or UVerse.
Yes, sir. Really
that's, so just, that's, well, listen, I got some other calls in the queue, and I'm going to get
you. God bless you. Thank you.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to speed around. Really speed around. My clock went to 12 in here.
Wow.
But I got a clock on my computer.
And your phone.
And my phone.
And Barrett's computer and Dwight's computer. And their phones.
The time,
and tablets.
Here, the time at the
tone
will be 21:44 and 40 seconds.
I can't
seconds.
Even read it because you got white.
White on white.
Beep. White on white.
It's 9:44.
You're white, right? You're on white, white rice on white bread.
That's at Kim Sung. That's a nice little thing at Kim Sung. I like that. That's sculpture.
Aww. All right, Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have up?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Steve.
Steve, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
I'm making a recovery disk for a new computer or any computer. Can I put it on an SD drive or really versus a USB?
Depends on the computer. Some of them will allow you to boot those things from an
USB. Is it a new computer?
Newer one will.
Is it a new computer?
Yeah, like I have one that doesn't have a disk drive, so you have to either use a USB or CSD card. I was wondering which one.
Did you say SD?
Yeah.
Can computers boot off SD?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
New ones.
Well,
can, yeah.
the is it a Dell or HP or what?
HP.
Okay, so it's taking you through the process of making your recovery disks, right?
Yeah.
And is it tell you what you can use or not use?
I recall it's been a while. I think it was.
It's been a while. That's not the same as having a new computer.
Yeah.
How old is the computer?
About a couple of weeks old.
Okay, a couple of weeks. That's so brand new from the store?
Yeah.
Okay. When you go through the recovery process, it should tell you you will need optical discs, you will need a thumb drive, you will need an external hard drive, or what it should tell you what media. I haven't made recovery discs on a new computer in a long, long time. Also, the HP has what they call a recovery partition on it. So you don't absolutely have to make the recovery disc. It's good to have them in a pinch. But I would follow the instructions, and you could probably do it to a USB drive, and if it has an SD reader on there, you could probably do it to the SD, but the process should tell you what you can use.
Yeah, I like the SD because more, I kind of could just laminate it to the laptop and I'm like, for it when
yeah.
it goes down.
Yeah, the SD card has more appeal to me if that'll work than a USB because there's less... A USB drive has the actual solid state drive and a circuit board, and those things the circuit board can fail. So the SD actually might hold up better. And like you said, you could just tape it to the side of the computer.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for your help. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye. All right, Groove House, who's up next?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Charles.
Charles, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
Oh, yeah, first thing on that Chrome default, there's a setting in Chrome that you can actually do that and make it a default browser.
On an iPhone?
Oh, an iPhone? I think it's about the PC.
No, I was talking about the iPhone.
Oh, sorry about
that. But thanks for that anyway.
Yeah. You know, that other thing about the going with cutting the cable. I would love to cut my cable, but I love sports. And if you got your buddies over, it's kind of hard to watch ESPN Sunday afternoon football without.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one thing. There's not. I don't know that there's a very good answer for is sports.
Like there is a Watch ESPN app, that but you have to have a cable subscription to sign into it.
Okay.
In order to use it, but
Roku also has. I know they've got like you can subscribe to MLB packages and NBA packages,
right.
And if you know what sport you're after, Roku has apps where you can go in and sign up.
Yeah, but the cable though, you know, your boy's over, you can like halftime, you can switch to another game. Or
yeah, it's not that
stuff.
Easy.
Yeah, but I'm going to ask you about my printer here. I'm going to these, you know, you go to Walmart or whatever, and you get these do everything printers for like $60,
mm-hmm.
but they seem to last 6 months, toner costs much as the printers. Is there a brand or suggestion y'all have on these printers?
Well, what my suggestion on a printer, first of all, do you have to print color?
Yes. My kids at school, and then, you know, they do homework, and sometimes they have to have a color or whatever.
It's an expensive proposition to print in color. It's always an expensive proposition. The refill cartridges are expensive. You'll spend more on cartridges. I mean, basically what these printer companies do is they give you the printer.
Yeah.
And then they hook you on the refills.
Razor blade kind of model.
Yeah.
Right.
So
the thing to do is don't buy the $60 printer.
Right.
Spend a decent amount on the printer. You're still going to spend a decent amount of ink, but the printer will last a while.
So, yeah, rather than buy a $60 printer, buy a couple $100 printer and then buy the high-capacity cartridges because you'll save money with that too. So, like HP makes a series of all-in-one printers that are – very good printers. I just bought one about a year ago, and it's so much better than the cheap printer that I replaced.
Do you need
with.
To print photos, like high quality photos
no.
on glossy print?
No, very
then,
rarely.
Then buy a color laser jet. You're going to have to spend a couple $100, but the toner is cheaper.
What's the
on
price
average
per page?
Price?
Excuse me.
It's fluctuated, but it's generally cheaper. But the main thing is that. Laser print toner cartridges do not dry out. They're already dry. They're already
yep.
a powder.
Right.
And those other ones, if you don't use them for like a few weeks or a couple of months, the heads will.
Not so much on the newer ones. I like I was just saying, I've just got a newer one of the HPs, and I used to have to like clean my brother printer every time I used it. I had to clean the heads because it would not print properly. The newer ones seem to be a lot better at that.
The price per page, for me, the price per page is still, plus the clarity on a laser printer is so much better. I mean, they've definitely gotten better. The inkjets
what's
have definitely
the, what's
gotten
the
better.
What's the price on a color laser these days?
I just bought now this was on sale, but I just bought an HP low-end, network and wired wireless for, I think, $250.
Oh, that's not bad. That's
I think normal price is $300 or $320.
Is the toner all in one, or is the individual colors?
This one actually is individual. It's four toner cartridges.
So how much is it per toner cartridge?
The toner cartridges are $40 or $50, I think, a cartridge, and I think they go like 3,000 pages.
Yeah, see,
or something. It's
that's crazy. That's good.
I think their price per page is pretty good.
Okay, I mean, I know what you're saying, but you spend $40-$50 on a toner, and
you're gonna spend $120-$240 if you have to replace all of them.
Yeah, no, I
yeah.
mean part
and
of the reason
buy, what five of the I mean four of the cheap ones.
Well, I ended up I had a friend who needed one, and I actually got a free one from a used one, and I went to the store and I was like, well, I need to buy new toner cartridges. The toner cartridges were $90. For a one color and one black toner cartridge. I'm like, that's as much as a brand new one with toner cartridges. It's cheaper to buy it and throw it away and get a new one instead of buying toner cartridges. So instead of doing that, I paid $20 more and got, I think it was a Brother, black only, not color, laser printer. And the toner cartridge will last for probably a year. You know, depending on how much you use it. But for them,
but
probably lasts about
dilemma,
a year.
Though, because, you know, you buy the laser printer, and then, you know, if I spend $300 and the other ones would cost me $60, like on Black Friday or
Yeah, so you buy a new printer every year on Black Friday.
Yeah, I mean, they're giving them away, basically. $40
It's unfortunate. It's printing is an expensive proposition, especially if you're doing a lot of it. I find that if I can get away from printing color, a black and white laser printer is your best value. It's a couple of cents a page, and the toner lasts forever. You get a couple, you can get them rated where they'll put out a couple of thousand pages before you have to do anything. Printing color is always a more expensive proposition. But listen, we're running out of time, and good luck with that.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for your call.
Bye.
All right, so what do we got? We got time for the speed round, these last two,
yep,
if we can.
All right, let's take Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi, I just got Windows 8, and the screen changes on me, like to the store and some weird stuff. I know how to go to the top left corner to get out of it, but what am I doing that makes it go to a different screen?
Say that again.
When I go into Windows, I'm looking at my desktop, and then it goes to these different screens, like the ones that have all the apps and the ones that...
Like the tiles?
The tiles,
and stuff like that. And I don't know how I'm changing the screen, but I just go to the top corner to change it back. You know
what makes
I'm
it
doing
change?
To make it do that in the
What's
first
he doing
place?
That makes it...
Makes it go to the tile view?
You either are going to the lower left-hand corner and clicking down, and there's Windows 8 or 8.1?
I'm not sure.
Is it the newest one, which is 8.1?
I just got it about a week ago.
Does it have a start button on the desktop?
The difference like that.
Does it have a start button? Sir, does it have a start button on the desktop?
Yeah.
That takes it to this tiles. That's the new start menu.
Okay. I'll take a look and see if I can do that. What about all these apps? I feel like I'm on micro Facebook or something. They want to give me all these free apps like Hula. Is it best to kind of just stay away from that if you don't want them getting in your
business?
If you
don't want them, don't download them.
Don't click anything you don't want.
Yeah, I just saw it and figured it didn't look good, and it was just kind of almost like they're trying to sell you stuff, like a sales call.
You can also delete those tiles. I don't know how you do it, but right-click. I know you can delete the tiles.
Okay.
Don't want to see
I'll look into that. One more real
No, Richard, we're out of time. We've got to get to the
no
next
problem.
Call.
Thank
Thanks.
You.
Thank you.
All right, last up, we're going to take Richard. Quickly.
Richard, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Yeah, just some quick questions. I use Microsoft Security Essentials. I use CCleaner and Malwarebytes for security, but I also like to use StartPage with IxQuick, which is a Denmark search engine, because it seems like I get what I really want. In other words, if you want science or whatever, they have some commercials at the top, and then the rest is more or less what you're looking for. And also, it saves you the problem of the search cookies and all that kind of stuff. What do you think about that? What's your opinion?
I haven't had any experience with
it. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
StartPage. Oh, you've never heard of StartPage?
Mm-mm.
Oh, well, you should try it then.
All right, we'll take a look.
Yeah, plug it in, and if you have a couple of minutes, maybe you can give a comment on it. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right. That wraps
StartPage is like, a Windows app.
Never heard of it.
Looks just like a search engine that's a little bit more private than the others, is what it's trying to say. So
StartPage.com. So it's the world's most private search engine.
Sponsored by the NSA.
We keep all your data.
I thought that's what
the guy who wanted to wipe his smartphone cookies probably.
I thought that's part of what DuckDuckGo was it was like
DuckDuckGo
private.
DuckDuckGo. Yeah.
DuckDuckGo.
All right.
Very interesting set of calls tonight.
That was a very interesting set of calls. I really kind of liked the variety, and that was fun.
Throw the tab.
Boink! Oh, my eye!
Doctor says I'm not supposed to get tab in it.
Throw the tab, Johnny.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bytes here on KPFT here in
Houston.
When's
the Geek Gathering?
Geek Gathering is the first Friday of the month, which would be
which
this
be
coming
this
Friday.
Friday.
It'll be the Friday that's the coldest. So if you're
but
in
come
Houston,
anyway.
If you're in
they
Houston
have a door
this Friday, if you're in Houston Friday, December the
fourth?
This Friday.
Fifth.
Today's the fourth.
Sixth.
December 6th.
Okay, so Saturday is Pearl Harbor Day. Okay.
The day before the geek gathering
that freezes in infamy. So yeah, come on out for that. All right, well, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight. And he's
Groovehouse.
See you next week for more Technology Bites.
Good morning, Ithaca.
This season has you feeling extra charitable, but you don't want to spend it frivolously, tempted by TV ads and store promotions. This time of year, more than any, you want your gifts to mean something. And if one of those gifts is to KPFT during our year-end online campaign, please know that that means a lot. Your generous, tax-deductible gift goes straight to work for the music, news, and radio programming that never stops, even on a holiday. Please visit kpft.org during week one of our quiet campaign and make your year-end gift safely and securely online. We wish you a happy new year of listening and enjoyment of KPFT. This is KPFT Houston.
Weekday at 9, KPFT features programming by you. It's called Open Journal, and it's an experiment in truly community radio. On Open Journal, regular listeners just like you come into KPFT studios to host their own programs. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, but it's always unique. Open Journal airs weekdays at 9 a.m. The community spotlight at 9:30 is here for you. Open Journal is what community radio is all about. You can even participate and host your own Open Journal. Just drop by KPFT's website at kpft.org to download an Open Journal application. We provide the help, you provide the knowledge. Tune in to Open Journal at 9 a.m. weekdays. This is KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.